Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast, where we explore cutting-edge strategies to keep teams human-centered, drive innovation, and empower you with the tools and insights needed to help your team excel and thrive in today's changing world. Your host is Dane Gruneveld, a seasoned expert with over 20 years of experience enhancing team dynamics and innovation. When we avoid hard conversations, we don't just allay discomfort. We invite deeper dysfunction. In this episode of The Future of Teamwork, Dane is joined by Dan Tacchini. Dan is a distinguished entrepreneur and executive with a career spanning over four decades in transformational leadership and organizational development. As the founder and a senior partner at Take New Ground, Dan has pioneered innovative approaches to team dynamics and leadership training, emphasizing authentic engagement and candid feedback. They'll start by exploring why many leaders opt for short-term gain at the cost of long-term pain and what it takes to break that cycle. Along the way, Dan shares what to do when you can't keep your word, and why integrity is less about perfection and more about realignment. And before they wrap, they dive into a powerful metaphor, the cave, the uncomfortable place we avoid, but where the treasure is waiting. If you've ever struggled with team accountability, avoiding tension for the sake of harmony, or wondered how to lead without losing trust, this conversation is worth listening to. So, teamwork makes the dream work, and we're here to inspire your next collaborative breakthrough. Gather your team or put on your headphones, and let's dive in together.
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork. My name's Dane Gruneveld, CEO of the Huddle 3 Group. And today I'm joined by Dan Tacchini. Dan is the co-founder of Take New Ground. And we've just been having a great conversation pre-show around, you know, the state of leadership in teams right now and how people can be making fear their ally. So I'm excited to dive into that and all of the other great work that Dan does. But first of all, Dan, welcome to the show.
Well, Dane, thank you for having me. I'm honored to be here. I was looking forward to this, so I can't wait for the conversation.
Me neither.
What might arise?
That's always the fun part about these conversations, Dan. We kind of come in here and we just kind of see where we go, what drives energy, and what our respective stories are.
Right on.
So let's start with your story. How did you come to be doing all this really cool work?
Well, there's two veins. I come out of an entrepreneurial family, so from a very young age, one of the ways I really learned to relate to my dad was, my dad's in the movie business, theater exhibition, right? He has movie theaters. And we would drive around the country, and he'd be looking at sites, and he would talk to us about what he was doing, and I was the oldest. And inevitably, I started reading leases and understanding leases at like 12, 13, just for fun, just because I could talk to my dad doing that.
That's
right.
Awesome.
So I started that way. My mother, we had a kind of a tragic story. My mother was became schizophrenic after she had my youngest brother, who was 9 years younger, and I was 12. I became the go-between between them. So human interaction, human performance, human psychology, and I ended up studying philosophy, a particular school of philosophy called phenomenology, which just means the study of humans becoming. What does it mean to become? Like what brings us forth, what calls us into the world, right?
Yes.
So that helped me. I learned to communicate with my mom over the years. She lived a long life, died at 82 because she got anaphylactic response from a reaction to the fires here in California.
Oh, yeah.
And so it was a few years back. But she lived a long and happy life. You know, it took 20 years to get her straight, and then she had a good 30 years where she lived by herself. I remember asking her, why don't you ever get remarried? She said, who wants to live with us, right? She had a great sense
good
of humor.
Sense of
brilliant.
Humor.
Right. You know, schizophrenia is usually what hits brilliant people. And she was quite brilliant, multiple languages, pianist and that whole deal. But so there was a whole human aspect of it. So one of the things I specialize in and our consultancy specializes in is really helping leaders catalyze their teams, align their teams, leverage the talent on the teams, create a culture of excellence. You know, I always say, people say, well, your team's not your family. You're right. It's not your family. You can treat them like family, but they got to understand they're there because they accomplished something.
Yes.
And as long as they're can be trustworthy that way and they're, you know, and I suppose, and I always thought, well, it's the same thing in a family. If I show up in my family like a dick, well, they're going to extra, you know, they're going to still include me.
Yeah.
I'm not going to have the privileges I would have if I was a functioning member.
Correct.
And so, but I like the sense in family is that I want to be concerned about people, about who they are, what they're up to, what matters to them. And if it doesn't work for them to be there, it's better for them to move on, right?
Yeah.
And the same here. If it doesn't work, if it's not working for me, then it's not going to work for them in the long run either. You know, you got to take your personal agendas and line them up with what the corporate agenda is. And if you can't get something out of that, if that's not exciting to you, well, you got to go find somewhere where it is. And so you got to vet that out. That's a big part of, I think, onboarding. And
I agree. Yeah. I think a lot of people, particularly in the pandemic period, went overboard in just pleasing employees.
Yeah.
But actually employees don't show up for those perks. They show up to feel accomplishment, to feel a sense of mattering, to know that the work that they're doing actually has an impact.
They make a difference. If they're showing up for any other reason, they're probably not going to be a good fit.
Yeah.
You're going to set up a welfare state and you're going to get frustrated.
So. Yeah. Absolutely. And it's fascinating, as you suggest, that you started learning business and entrepreneurship from just that want of having something to talk to dad about or be on the trip with dad about. Like, I think that's an interesting leadership phenomenon that I see in a lot of leaders right now, particularly with you know, boomer parents, older parents who, you know, set that role model of hustling and working hard.
Yeah.
And it's probably something that, and I've been intrigued in your work, it's something that we're having to sort of reprogram a little bit now too, because the old way of working, just kind of grin and bear it and muscle through it, doesn't always work.
No. Well, and you know, it's interesting because my father, he was like, you fight with your head. You learn business happens here, right?
Yeah.
So, and if you're out to get something, you want to have something happen, you find ways to work it. I'll never forget, he was going to buy some film because we'd go to San Francisco when I was a kid. And he would say to me, we're going over the Golden Gate Bridge, I'll never forget. He said, now I'm going to go in here. And, I would sit outside. They had these open offices, but they had glass around them, And he would have me sit, wait for him as he go in and negotiate the film. He said, you're going to hear me at some point probably begging him. Like, I'm going to give him, come on, Tony, you got to give this to me. Because you got to understand, you got to give people what they need.
Yes.
To get what you need. And if it takes a little begging to get the film I need, I'm up for it. He goes, and he says, so, you got to know who you're talking to. And I've taken that with me. It's like, know who you're talking to. What are their interests? Mm-hmm. How do their interests fit into your interests? Because, look, there are two sets of interests or more at the table. And how do you accommodate as much of those interests, yours and theirs, as you can to get yours? And how can you see that trade? Can you see, how are you able to find those interests and how they intersect and serve each other? And I mean, he spent a lot of time with us talking about that. And as a result, all of us are damn good salesmen, my sister included, my little brother, I have two little brothers and a sister.
Yeah.
And I have a brother from the second marriage, my dad's second marriage. And we've all learned that, we've all learned to sell and get involved and add value. And if I can add value to you, which means meet your interest, I'm going to probably get what I need. And I can see how adding value to yours is going to get me what I need. So
100%. It's interesting that we still don't teach sales in schools. I think because it's so difficult, and it is something that's learned more through practical application than through a textbook.
Yeah, we have some very specific frameworks for this type of thing, but particularly, how do you turn a obstacle into a resource?
Yeah.
Right? That's probably the most important thing we do as a consultancy at Take New Ground is, how do we support, how do we help people do that, leaders do that? Because the number one thing that I think undermines leaders is their unwillingness or their fear, if you will, of having difficult conversations with their executives, right?
Yep.
Because there are so many quid pro quos, they're afraid of losing those things or losing and being, having more, for one big one is, I don't want that on my plate, right?
Yeah.
Right? So there's a, in a very, let's say, appropriate and socially acceptable way, there's a bit of a blackmail going on back and forth.
Absolutely. Yeah. I liked what you said pre-show. You said we accept the short-term gain.
For the long-term pain.
For the long-term pain, exactly. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, I found that most of my engagement, when we're hired, to come solve a problem.
Yeah.
We're not hired for one-offs. Let us come do your team. We're not inspirational speakers. We're problem solvers, and we'll put two or three executives on the ground to work with your team to A, scope the problem, B, strategize it, and C, deliver and execute.
Yeah.
And inevitably what it comes down to I really can't think of exceptions, they don't want to have the conversations that they need to have to enculturate what they want to do.
Yeah.
So rather they try to look for the tendencies to look for workarounds, and it's the workarounds that get them in trouble. You know, the principle I operate from is what you're unwilling to face now will ultimately defeat you.
Oh, I like that. Can you say that again?
Yeah. What you are unwilling to face now will ultimately defeat you. So, I've got an example. I'm in the middle of a job right now. There's a big tech conference that's going to be coming up real soon. The founders came to us and said, oh, we're stuck. You know, we've been doing this since January. We want to do this tech conference come fall on a certain date. And, we've got like 70 sponsors lined up. We're not getting any, we haven't really been able to close them. We're having some issues with execution right now. Can you help us? So we got in there, we started talking to them. Well, it turned out that these four founders they got so excited about what they're doing. They did some great work about, you know, getting in touch with big sponsors like OpenAI and a bunch of other folks and good, you know, just a lot of good companies that and they're not closing them. And as I did some forensics with my partner, we discovered they hadn't really landed on how they were going to get paid, who was going to drive what, is it going to be commission and equity, like none of that was settled. So there was a lot of, as it got more particular and it looked like it was going to be a success. Well, they had, because they've got some real interest, they started squabbling amongst themselves.
And they sabotaged it then.
Yeah. And my point to them was, we started talking, I said, look, you're better off pushing this to the spring and getting these, you know, you've sabotaged yourself. You can get the short-term gain of putting something on, but what's the long-term pain to your credibility, the stress between the four of you? Will you survive it? There's a lot to you, and they still haven't landed it, but they're getting clear. And two of the three of the four said, you got a point, you know, maybe we should do that. But now they're talking about, well, maybe we should just, you know, do our best and see what we can get out of it, that's the short-term gain. They, you know, because there's a lot of things they'd have to renegotiate.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's not that big of a deal. It's just uncomfortable. And, you know, you'd have to sit down and frame the narrative. And I have a framework that I use to frame the narrative. But what's most important is, what I've been trying to draw with them is, and this is what's got them uneasy, is the parade of horribles that I wanted them to consider that are possible, that are probably more likely than having it work smoothly because of the current condition, the time crunch. My point to them is not an accident that you're in this position. This position serves something that you are used to, familiar with, but undermines your ultimate success.
That's really interesting. And tell me more about the parade of horribles, Dan. Like, what does that look like? Well, how does that take shape?
Well, the Parade of Horribles is, so one of the things that occurred to us is, are you guys aware of, they wanted us to join them. They liked our coaching so much and consulting. They offered us a piece and, you know, and we said, look, we're willing to talk to you about it, but probably not if you're going to do it when you have planned, because it's our brand.
Yeah.
And we don't want our brand associated with something we think is ultimately going to be substandard.
Yeah.
And why we think that is because, A, you are not landed yet as a group. You've got 12 weeks max to do this. It's a major event.
Yeah.
You've got major sponsors. You're out of their budgeting cycle, so you're going to be picking up the odds. You're going to get odds and ends if you get, you know, through the ones you do get. You're crunched for ticket sales. And we don't get that you really have somebody out. You've got a lot of things that are covered that will work. We help them rewrite their brand, the mission statement. That turned them on. They like that. Because it just was too mundane. It was too, if I showed it to you, you'd go, okay, what am I doing there? Like, yeah. Why would I go to this? And we got it all cleared up. We put a hook in it, and there's just a lot of good stuff that we came up with and with them,
yeah.
You know, together we collaborated. We had a great time. But my point to them is, so what happens when OpenAI or, you know, Cisco or any of these big tech
story.
Companies come in and they see it's not up to snuff. It's not optimal. It's what happens next year? What happens with the press?
Yeah.
What happens with your other vendors that, you know, speakers, et cetera? Because the word of mouth is going to get out. You've got some, you know, so like what happens next year? And what, you know, like if we're a brand with you, what happens to our brand if that gets around? If it becomes a, you know, a failure even. Like
yeah.
It's completely, you don't have, you know, they want to get 2,000 people.
That's big.
They want five, but they're willing to settle for two. I told them, look, after we looked at resources, you might be looking at 1,500 or 1,200.
Yeah.
You still make money, but you got to ask yourself, all what is this going to mean? And then what kind of stress between the four of you, because you're still not landed. How long will it take to get landed? You're somewhat far apart from each other. You have different interests. You're not clear about them. They're getting clear because when you get to specifics, people get clear.
Yes.
Right? And I said, and they asked me, they said, well, why did you say this is not an accident? And I said, because it serves your strategies. And they go, what do you mean? I said, so this is what most entrepreneurs don't think about. You have what you have because it serves you. So
yeah.
You've been ambiguous about this because you didn't want the discomfort of talking about money and responsibility in a way that could alienate each other because you know you need each other and you weren't willing to put that at stake to understand how you could have each other.
Yeah.
And so now you're paying that price with penalties and interest.
Yeah.
And that's how we do it. We, you know, so if you can own the fact that the ambiguity was a cover for you, it covered up the conversations you weren't willing to have. Those conversations are now defeating you.
That's exactly right. That now it goes full circle. That makes total
right.
sense.
They're slowing you down, and the slowdown's costing you money and probably credibility
and trust in the team.
And
I would imagine too
in the team.
Yeah,
and you're not getting the synergy you could get
if
you really landed those questions. In fact, those questions would cause you to be more intimate because you would understand each other, and you'd have to demand of each other to find ways around to support each other's interests. And there's a way to do that. I have a whole, you know, you got to separate interest from positions. Most people think the position is their interest, but it, you know, like one gal's fighting for equity and cause she's put a lot of work in. I said, well, you know what if the thing loses?
Yeah.
Are you going to lose? She goes, yeah. I said, but if you got paid commission, you would get paid anyway for your good work.
Yeah.
Because you get commission from the sponsors. And then if it loses money, you're covered.
Yeah.
Right? She was worried about not being covered. She goes, well, I never thought about that. I said, well, you have to think about your interests, not the position. You thought that position was better for your interests. But as we got clear about your interests, you realized maybe it's better to do maybe a little equity and more commission, or commission, not equity.
Yeah.
Like you, we haven't even gone into that, but you're seeing that your original position didn't ultimately, I mean, it left you kind of vulnerable to your interest.
Yeah.
Which was to cover the money you put up, or the time and energy you put in.
When do you find, when you're doing that work, Dan, and you're working with a leadership team, where do you find their positions come from? Are they pre-programmed? You know, someone comes from another company where they said, hey, equity's everything, or?
It could be that. It could be they, you know, like what I discovered was not only did this particular person really want commission, but they wanted a title. They wanted the,
yeah.
Which is okay. I mean, so the other guys listen to it. They, oh yeah, we'll give you that title. But that comes out 6 months later. Like if they could have learned all that in the first month.
Yeah.
Right. But they didn't want to have those conversations. And, you know, most of us are unconscious to that. So one of the things I talk to them about is pay attention to your complaints. Mm. Because your complaints are unsurfaced requests that you're probably afraid to make. So instead of making them, you complain about them so you can feel right, you can feel moral, you can feel you get some payoff,
yeah,
from not asking, not risking, or not under, like if I ask, you have to answer. If your answer is inadequate, we then explore. But they're not thinking in that way. They're thinking, if I ask and you say no, it's over.
Yeah, don't rock the boat.
No, it just, yeah, right. Instead, it surfaces the interest. So my point to them is, you know, if you weren't so entitled to feeling good,
yeah,
and being right, what might open up?
Yeah.
Like if you could be uncomfortable, if you could live in the tension of not getting what you want, in the tension of possibly losing the possibility, what might you discover?
That's powerful. Right? Yeah, that's super powerful. I know in your, on one of your, actually, I think it was your LinkedIn profile, you had three things that caught my eye when you're working with a leadership team. One of them was courageous leadership. The second one was creative conflict resolution. And then the third one, which is what I'm hearing here, is this relevant restructuring.
That's right.
Yeah.
You're seeing how it flows. And that comes from being candid, right?
Yeah.
So if I'm candid with you, the thing about being candid is you actually find out who's over there. And in that candidness, right, you can, it's like you get clear, right? It brings up clarity. So you want to be candid to get the clarity. And when you get clear, you see what's wanted and needed. And now you can bring forth commitment.
Yes.
Right? So candor, clarity, commitment. And that helps reveal what's wanted and needed, and then nail down a set of promises that will forward your commitment, forward your vision.
Yeah.
If you will.
No, that makes total sense to me. And it sounds like you've got some good frameworks there to help people. So what I'm hearing, Dan, is like, if you've got a team, whether it's you're starting a new business, or maybe you're just starting a new project in an organization, right, and you're bringing your team together for the project, there's something here that feels to me like a team launch. Like, hey, let's come and build our story, build clarity too deep.
Yeah. And that's really, unfortunately, most people, and particularly in corporations, because we do a lot of work with big companies, Fortune 100. If you look at our website, you'll see we've worked with a lot. And, you know, you're entrepreneurial in the organization. You have a budget. You're creating agreement. You're in a community where you're creating credibility. You're work, and that's your future. And so when you put a team together, you've got a bunch of individuals who are also doing that. And the idea is you got to get them to see that the success of this project is good for their individual agendas.
Yes.
And once that gets aligned, then you've got much more power. You've got an alignment. You now can discuss what's wanted and needed, but you got to be willing to have the individual and collective conversations that create that narrative.
Yeah,
and get people's buy-in, which means you got to do a lot of listening. And one of the things we work with is how to listen distinctly and intently, like with intention.
Yes.
So you know, when you're aiming at something, neurologically, what it does is it creates a hierarchy of concerns in your listening automatically. You don't have to worry about it. So if I say, I'm talking to Dane, we're going to go, my aim with Dane is to learn how I can serve Dane. And if that works, we can work together on this project.
Yeah.
So as I listen to you, because I know that I need to be clear first about how what we're doing is going to serve you. How can I, let's understand that. Now, when I'm listening for your hierarchy of concerns, like what matters to you. Do they fit what I'm aiming at? Mm-hmm. Now, if they do, and I see you light up and we start the synergy starts to occur, we get excited and we're being specific. And we talk about what the potential downsides are. And, you know, we cover the thing. We get disciplined. We have the conversations we're afraid to have now, yep, as much as possible. And we create that kind of relationship. Now I've got a better sense of what it's going to take to both serve you and in serving you serve the purpose. Because I get in serving you, it serves the purpose. You get in serving the purpose, it serves you. So yeah, now we have an alignment. And there's an openness about, hey, if this ever goes sideways or you think there's something up, let's get in it. Let's not let it eat at what we're doing. Let's not let it defeat us later on.
Yeah. I really like that visual framing as well of going to defeat us if we don't clean it up.
Yeah, I work to unplug people from the fear that they're going to be taken advantage of, that it's really up to them. And let's start right here. And if you don't do it here, how you make fear your ally is you see what's coming down the pipe if you don't do it here. Yeah. Like those four I talked about, they have a good sense of how they've defeated themselves or undermined the very hard work they've already put in.
Yeah.
And good work. Good. They've done some really good work. So it's like, man, if you go forward in this, just think about it, because you've been diligent in many areas except for right here. And I would imagine because you've not been diligent here, it makes sense to me you don't have any sponsors committing because you haven't handled the money situation between you. So you're not asking for what you want in a way that would bring to surface what you need to navigate to get to the yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Which is fascinating, just how for any of the listeners out there that are running customer facing organizations, the clarity within your team, it always shows up in your sales and your service.
Oh man. It's so true. I mean, we've suffered, you know, like I said, you know, people say, well, I'm an expert. You're an expert if you've failed multiple times and you can, you don't want to buy that t-shirt again.
Yeah.
And you can help other people not to buy that t-shirt, buy this one, you know?
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so true. How do you find it works in your model, Dan? Do you always need to have a facilitator to work through some of these frameworks on sort of launching a team or a project, or is there a way to learn the methodology? Are there any sort of, for any listeners out there that are having a trouble with a team, is there a good starting point for them?
Yeah. On our website, we have there's on the menu at the top of the website says public trainings.
Yeah.
Now, our clients we have two basic leadership trainings. One is called the Revenant Process. It's a 4-day intensive, and I mean intensive, utilizing the very stuff, you know, the frameworks. We illuminate the frameworks. We exercise the frameworks. It's experiential. As you come in, your life is basically the content that gets revealed and you're leading something and you're going to lead in the room, right?
Yeah.
Over 4 days. The other one's the Intrepid, which is the Academy for Effective Leadership. And that's basically a 60-day program with 3 weekends.
Yes.
First, we have you come in. We have you get one or two people that on your team or whoever you work with or friends.
Yeah.
How you prefer to coach? Preferably somebody that's involved in a project you want to forward, or they're involved in a project you're about to go. And we assign you with one of us to coach you. while you're coaching them. And then you bring you in to the weekend and we go through these frameworks and we put you in front of a camera and have you work with them.
Oh, wow.
Coach others, listen, and we watch how you listen. We show you how you listen. We show you, like, if you say something, like, so for instance, if I said to you, hey, man, you're 10 minutes late. Did you notice that? And you go, oh, traffic, blah, 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 blah. And I said, well, oh, yeah, I get it. There's traffic. But let me ask you, what was your purpose in telling me that?
Interesting. Like,
if I asked you what your purpose is, then it would throw, you'd have to think about, yeah, why did I say that? All I asked is, do you recognize you're late?
Yeah.
And you told me why you were late.
Fear drove them to a broader answer, yeah, I guess.
Do you notice you go to self? It sounds like a little thing, but it already tells me if somebody says that, like, it's no problem being late. I can deal with it.
Yeah.
But if you're late and you're going to justify it, I already know that you're not too curious about what's wanted and needed or what's possible for you, like what's your next level. Like, you're already in some kind of resignation, and you've resigned yourself to being right about what doesn't work.
Right.
Now, but if you're open, you go, oh, wow, I didn't recognize it. I see that you asked me that and I did that. That's interesting. That's an interesting person. That person is considering something because they're coming to get something done.
Yeah.
And if they're more concerned with looking good, being right, feeling good, you know, or being in control than having it turn out, I want to see how attached to that, because we all are attached to some level of that. Can they are they aware of it, and can they let go of it long enough to look at other possibilities, to see what's wanted and needed, to join in a partnership in reinventing our relationship together to go forward?
Yeah, that's very interesting. That actually brings me to a live fire exercise I might run by you, Dan. So I'm coaching a couple of people right now. We agreed on a clear approach to solving a problem. And sure enough, you know, the first time we saw that problem emerge, they didn't follow through the agreed approach.
What did they say?
I went and said, hey, I thought we'd agreed on this. And they said, yeah, but if I did that, this would have happened and that would have caused a downstream impact.
Okay, good. So you be them, I'll be you.
Yeah, go for it.
Hey, Dane, I thought we agreed to this. We were going to do this, but I noticed you chose to do something other than that than what we talked about what we're going to be up to.
Yeah. Well, if I did what we agreed, this would have happened with the customer and I would have had to have done a whole lot more work.
Okay. So a whole lot more. So was your concern to get it done the way we talked about, or was your concern to save yourself from having to do more work?
It was the latter. It was definitely saving myself from doing more work.
Right. So what did that have to do with us as a team?
You're right. It's got nothing to do with us as a team.
Right on. No big, no bad. But maybe that's so let's talk about, if that continues, what do you think we're going to have in a month from now? Like, if you and I don't have these conversations and you or me, I could, you know, listen, I suffer from the same temptation. If I just decide to do what's easiest for me instead of what's best for us.
Yes.
What's going to happen between us, you think?
We're going to get frustrated with each other. We're going to not perform the way we want to perform.
You're probably not going to trust me.
We're not going to trust, yeah.
I'm not going to trust you. I'm going to be double, looking over my shoulder. You're going to be looking over your shoulder, like that. So that's how I start to build, like, and then if they get, you know, pushed, it doesn't matter where they go, because what I'm doing is, look, one of the biggest things we work with is living as your word.
Yes.
Now, living as your word doesn't mean you don't break your word. It means that when you break your word, you're willing to use your word to realign yourself and to explore what was more important than keeping your word.
Right.
And that's where the learning comes in. It also is where innovation comes in.
Yeah. Right? So what would an example of that be? Have you worked with a customer before when someone said, hey, I know we had disagreement, Dan, but I went this way because I valued it in these ways for the benefit of the team? Or how does that work?
I'm a little bit like Columbo. I get curious.
Yeah.
I want to say play stupid. I like, well, tell me more. I mean, I want to understand the thinking, because the action's a symptom. I'm not trying to correct the action.
Yeah.
want to get after the thinking that produced the action.
Yeah.
Right? The relationship, basically.
Yeah.
Right? And by the way, you know, you can't see a relationship, but you can hear it.
Oh, tell me more on that. How can you hear a relationship?
You can see the results of it, but you don't. So an action has a conversation behind it.
Yeah.
And so if I can hear the conversation.
Got it.
I can understand better what made. See, people always act congruently with the way the world occurs to them. And the way the world occurs for them happens in language. Mm. So if I can get into their language, I can understand how they see it. And maybe they see something I didn't. I mean, quite honestly, they might have a good point. I want to check into that. And even if they had a good point and they still didn't do what they said, what was missing between, like maybe they have some feedback to me about, hey, what kept you from letting me know, creating agreement with me before you did that?
Yes.
Like, let's talk about that. Did I miss something? Do you not trust me? Am I in the way? Am I a bottleneck? How are you relating to me? I'm going to investigate that conversation because, you know, look, ultimately, we're both there to have this turn out.
Yeah.
And I'm not there to have it turn out the way I want it to. I want to have it turn out. So if the way we agree to it doesn't work out, I'm okay with it if I can, A, if I can see how it makes a difference. B, if I get your you know, like we're together on it, because otherwise, if you're just going to be a lone ranger, then it's not going to work.
Correct. Yeah.
Or it's going to be suboptimal.
Or it sets a pattern of behavior in the wider team that's really problematic, because all of a sudden someone says, hey, that person's not doing what we agreed on, so I'm going to go and do my own thing to serve myself. Yeah, I know.
And boy, that is, most people don't take that into consideration. When I make somebody an exception,
yeah.
I was on the phone this morning and one of my clients called me and said, I got to talk to you, man. I'm letting three people go today. I don't know what, you know, this guy, he's the lowest guy in the totem pole. He's been late 25 times. I go, what?
Yeah.
So you let this guy go for, he's the lowest guy in the totem pole. He's late 25 times. I've told him and told him and told him. I said, yeah. And what is that telling everybody else around you?
Yeah.
You know, and he really got it. And he went, well, I said, so, and we had a long conversation. I was like, how? You know, I had no idea. I go, why didn't you let me? You know, I didn't think about it. He's the lowest guy in the totem pole. I didn't bring it up. And I had already been, and he goes, you were talking to me about this with this executive, which is one of the people he wants to fire, but he's going to give him another shot because he hasn't really had the conversation the way he needs to have the conversation with them so they can either get up to it or out.
Yeah.
Right. So we're, you know, he's backing off on that one, letting these two go, seeing how he's contributed to the breakdown and understanding better in the long run what he's going to have. Because the executive he was thinking about firing, he just hired 60 days ago.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh.
It's fascinating how often in that example, particularly in a busy team, we put so much of our leadership time and bandwidth in dealing with, you know, the 80% of problems that don't really matter. And we don't address those key standards and behaviors that are just going to lift the whole team.
Yep. And if your listeners want to get to the ones that matter, they're the ones you're most afraid of. You got to be willing to go into the cave.
Yeah.
You know, that's dark and fight that dragon to get the gold, right?
Yeah.
To get the treasure, as Joseph Campbell would say.
Yeah.
And the best way to find that is notice what you've avoided.
Yes.
What you tend to avoid that you go, no, fuck, I don't have the time for that. I don't have the energy for that. I don't want to risk what that could bring. That's the cave.
Yeah.
That's the cave. Go into that cave.
I love that. We're going to have to work with Alicia to build a visual there for going into the cave and fighting the dragon. One of my former coaches also used to talk about looking in the pond and looking
good.
At the reflection. Yeah, exactly. Which I thought was so good.
That's good. I like it.
Yeah.
Those are great archetypes, man.
Yeah, they're great. And so often, you're right, we know if we just get curious for a minute with ourselves or with a team member, we know what we're avoiding.
Yeah. And you've got to create language. You know, you've got you better be reading. You better be able to create a narrative. You have to create arc like that. You know, we just talked about two archetypes that people can understand the whole of the problem, so and get the sense of what you're after, and then you can go after the specifics, right? You've got to pull people up and then pull them down, bring them back into the details, pull them back up. They've got to understand what you're up to with them.
Yeah.
So they can join you. And really, they got to get that you have their best in mind. And their best in mind definitely relates to what the organization is going to be accomplishing.
Yes.
Otherwise, they're going to be drug under the bus one way or another. No matter if they're your friend or you're trying to protect them, you're going under the bus.
Yeah. And it's so true. And that's one of the hopes that I've got in the future of teamwork, is that we all find better ways to reduce the burden and the collateral damage that can often, you know, be the result for team members who are in the wrong team or in the wrong role or not clear what's required of them or their teammates.
Have that conversation early, man.
Yeah.
When something comes up and you find yourself pushing it under the rug, make time. And there's, you know, like I said, in our academy, we go through a couple of really great frameworks and thinking, ways of thinking, mindsets that put these frameworks to make them active, make them alive. You know, we work with people on video, and then we have them look at themselves on video and get feedback so that they can make these corrections and go again. And when, you know, when people have some pretty powerful breakthroughs during this period, because they've never taken the time to really think about the impact of their own, you've got to manage your impact, and they haven't thought about their impact and how to manage it.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's interesting, the more you go up in an organization, the more pressure you're under, the less you start to pay attention to those things that may be being said below in the organization that, you know, when you were there yourself, you would have expected better or expected to change.
Right on. In our organization, you know, I'm a founder, co-founder with my partner, but we, anybody in the organization, they'll say straight to me, they know, they'll call me on it. Well, you know, if I get defensive, which I, you know, that's my default is to get defensive and then think about it.
Yeah.
And they'll say, "You're being defensive, man. Are you listening?" And then I go, "Yeah, I am listening, but you know,
it's a good prompt.
Let me tell you what I heard." And I calm down, but you got to be able to catch each other. You got to be able to, you know, make a bid, right? You're making a bid.
Yeah.
I want them to make a bid. Hey, Dan, you're being defensive. Can you just listen?
Yeah.
That works for me.
Yeah. Right. But you got to know each other and styles there too, don't you?
Yeah. Some guys, you know, there's like four basic moods we pay attention to. Contempt.
Yeah.
Criticism, defensiveness, and stonewalling.
Huh.
Those are the four deadlies.
So contempt, criticism, defensiveness, and the last one was?
Stonewalling. Putting it off, isolating, shutting down, not talking.
Because that's when people are avoiding the uncomfortable.
Or they're working subversively. They will. If you stonewall, you're subversive. You're going to be subversive anyway.
Yeah.
You're going to say what you have to say some other way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
they're powerful. They're good telltales to keep an eye out for. This is really fascinating, Dan. The time's flown by. I do have one final question before we wrap up. Take New Ground. How did you come up with the name for the business?
Well, I had a different company and my partner. So I had another consulting firm I sold back in 2010.
Yeah.
And I was waiting, and I create curriculum, training curriculum, and I've created a curriculum. It's the top studied curriculum for kids coming out of gangs, that kind of stuff. And it's kind of a, you know, because I came out of the street.
Yeah.
So this guy hired me to come work with him, and after 2 years, the non-competes were up. He goes, we basically got back together and said, let's go into business together and do this for businesses. And he's a sharp guy, man. He's, you know, younger than I am, 45, I'm 70.
Yeah.
So he had a company called Take New Ground. I go, that's a great name. He goes, you gave it to me when you were coaching me one day. You told me, you kept saying, you got to take new ground. In fact, you use it all the time. I go,
that's awesome.
Yeah, I do. He goes, so we merged my current company at the time in to take new ground. That's how we got it.
Oh, that's so cool. It's powerful and it's very visual too.
Yeah.
Well, for any of our listeners that want to find your courses or learn from some of these approaches and frameworks that you've got, how do they best find you or the team at Take New Ground?
Our website is takenewground.com.
Yep.
That's one place. We have a podcast. We haven't done it for over a year. We stopped last year about this time. We did it for 5 years. There's 200 episodes. They're very relevant.
Great.
Episode 130 is my favorite.
Okay.
It's on Spotify. It's on Apple.
And what's the podcast name, Dan?
It's called The Naked Leadership Podcast.
Love it.
And but at takenewground.com, you'll get everything right there. You get a look at us, what we do, who we worked with. There's a video on there. There's some testimonies. There's also a free gift. I wrote an ebook called The Change Imperative. I was involved in the merger between Disney and ESPN, and I wrote it when I was there to help some of the executives anticipate change and be able to say, oh yeah, this is part of what change is. And
that's
a giveaway on the website.
That's awesome. Well, we'll make sure we add that to the show notes too. And Dan, it's been an absolute pleasure. I enjoyed the conversation. I was energized as well by some of your frameworks. And there's definitely some big takeaways there for me. But
come to our academy, man.
I'll have to. Yeah. I've got some time late summer. I'll put it in the calendar. That would be fun. And I look forward to catching up again soon.
All right, man. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dan. See ya.
Thank you for joining us. Remember that by embracing vulnerability, trusting our intuition, and approaching challenges with compassion, we not only strengthen our teams, but also pave the way for a future where collaboration thrives. If you're hungry for more insights, strategies, and research on collaboration, head over to thefutureofteamwork.com. There, you can join our mailing list to stay updated with the latest episodes and get access to exclusive content tailored to make your team thrive. Together, we can build the future of teamwork. Until next time,